Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Always. Yep, Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday, high noon. He now joins us. Darren, Donick, and Chase on this rainy Wednesday. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Got a question for you. I was watching your work on NFL Live yesterday. Why did they find it so hard to believe that you're nicer than Ryan Clark? I didn't understand why they just were having a hard time believing that.
I've developed a bit of a reputation there. Maybe being a little negative at times. So actually had a segment called Negatim or Positim, which I think probably stems from the time that I was on the radio with you guys and you were like Benny from the Bronx complaining about everything.
So I was about Benny, to say, I think Darren could be to blame Benny, for this.
So a little Benny's come out on NFL Live? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, I think what they, like, you know, I don't know. I don't think I'm being negative. I think I'm just being honest.
that's how I feel. I mean,
like, hey, give an off-season grade for the Packers, like, on their moves. And I'm like, you know, I thought it was a wasted pick to draft Jordan Love. Like, you know, A.J. Dillon, I love him, D.C. guy. I hope he has a great career. But Aaron Jones had 19 touchdowns last year. So you have to quarterback in the first round, and then you have to running back in the second round. And then the receivers that were, you know, within 14 picks of, you know, A.J. Dillon, so striking distance if you wanted to get some help for Aaron Rodgers, or like Denzel Mims, Chase Claypool, Van Jefferson, like, you know, so like, sorry, am I going to give you an A? Is that negative? I don't know.
No, I thought that was honest. A very honest assessment. Why is Diana Rossini giving him a B-plus and apologizing to Packers fans? What did I miss there?
See, you know, and Jeff Darlington was on saying that Tom Brady's actually a better golfer than that. I'm like, he doesn't need your help. Like, he's okay. I guess that makes me negative. I don't think so. So that's okay. Why I was. It was kind of like a, you know, the best defense is a good offense. So I just was just getting it out there that I'm nicer than Ryan Clark.
Good stuff. I want you to weigh in on something we discussed last hour. We had Heather Dinich start the last hour, and so we talked some college football, and I brought up the supplemental draft afterwards and said, don't some of these schools or the NCAA, somebody, don't they owe it to these student athletes and their families to kind of tell them the direction, like what is the plan? Is there 100% going to be football in the fall? You know, tell them something, because I know the supplemental draft doesn't get a lot of coverage because usually just like one guy goes in the supplemental draft, maybe two. You know, there's been Josh Gordon go and Terrell Pryor, but overall there's not much hubbub over the supplemental draft. But this year, Tim, if there's no real, you know, decisions out there to be made, nobody's really, it's still kind of up in the air, and oh, by the way, they will be playing during a pandemic. If some of these guys are eligible, do you think there's a real shot, especially if you told them, hey, we're not sure, and I think the supplemental draft is, what, in July, sometime in July? Wouldn't some of these kids flock to the supplemental draft? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, the guy that you know, is on my mind, and maybe it's because I had a few of their games this past year, is Travis Etienne, the running back from Clemson.
I brought him up.
But he decided to stay in, and I remember thinking at the time, I'm like, man, you're a running back. You're going to test well. I just was surprised at the decision to return to school for Travis Etienne. And, you know, now knowing what we know, like, I wonder if, you know, he's changed the way he's felt about, you know, coming back. And wonder how much he knows, and I wonder how much, you know, the school's communicating with him, because it's a big deal. I mean, and being a second-round pick, you know, or the Trey Smith,
sure, for UT, guard the from big tackle.
Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I know for, yeah, I know that there are teams that have a first-round grade on him, you know, this year. And he obviously has some health, you know, issues and stuff. But, like, yeah, you just start to think about those guys. And, like, it's a life-changing kind of decision at that point. And, you know, I think the end of the NCAA, I mean, they're probably more concerned about whether or not they're going to be able to do this, and, you know, how many, if they're not, what that's going to do to athletic programs around the country. And I'm sure that's the concern. But, yeah, I do think that, you know, those players are going to end up being hurt the most by this.
Since you obviously have some skins in the game, with ESPN, how do you feel right now? I know it's still May, but how do you feel? Yeah. I mean, I know schools like the University of Tennessee came out with.
I feel really good about the NFL.
That's why I'm not even bringing it up, because I agree with you. I kind of feel like it's going to go off the way that we sit here and look at the schedule. I think it's just going to go off the way it's scheduled right now. That's why I'm not even bringing up the NFL. I feel the same way. So what about on the college side? Like, how is this going to play out in your mind?
I don't have the slightest idea.
What's your gut telling you?
You know, my gut is telling me that there's no, you know, these schools want to come back, right? So if kids are by and large on campus, then I think there's a really good shot that you're playing college football. If you don't have kids on campus, which, I don't know, did I see that Tennessee made an announcement about that yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that, now all of a sudden, it's like, if you're getting a lot of that, then I don't know how you can have players on camp, living on campus or around campus, working out and practicing and meeting on campus, you know, or wherever their facility is, and then playing games on campus or wherever their stadium is. Like, I don't know how you can do that.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck.
I mean, would you agree?
I don't know what to make, Tim. I don't know. That's why I wanted to know where how you felt, because it's a different dynamic than any of the other sports. You know, we're talking about today, the NHL unveiled their plan yesterday, and we're still waiting on the NBA and the MLB. NFL, I agree with you. I just think it's going to be business as usual. Maybe
For the pro leagues, what's going to happen is if you can play them, you know, the owners are going to come and be like, hey, listen, we can do this. Players, are you on board? And they're like, wow, so I'm either going to get paid or not get paid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people are upset that it's about money and baseball and all that stuff. But, like, it comes down to the fact that, like, I think NFL players – the vast majority will want to play because they get paid over a 17-week, you know, season. And so until there's a regular season game, you're not getting paid. So, you know, I don't care if you've made $100 million playing football. If you're due to make 20, you're going to want to play. So, you know, whereas, like, in college football, I think the guys are going to want to play, but, like, their scholarship's not going away, and they don't have the say to be like, hey, we want to take that risk. I don't think that's how it works.
Take me into the mindset of Joe Flacco's camp, Tim, and why the Jets? Why was that the right option for him? I can see it from the Jets' standpoint. You want the guy that's clearly in the stage of, I would think, like, he has to accept that job, that he's Sam Darnold's backup, right? And hopefully he'll be a good source of information for Sam Darnold. That makes perfect sense. But is Joe Flacco ready to go to that stage of his career? Why New York?
I think for Flacco, because of his, one, how he's played, two, the injury history, and current health situation, and he's looking at you know, being a backup. And then I think at that point it's finding an opportunity where you feel like, you know what, this would be a good match for me in terms of who the starter is, what my role would be, who the people I'm around, and, you know, if it makes sense. So that's why I think, you know, Flacco is there. You know, and you know, I've heard a lot of people be like, well, look, he's not healthy. He's got this neck situation. You know, he's coming off of surgery with that, and he gets signed. Like, how come Cam Newton's not signed? You know, it's similar situation where it's a health concern. I think the difference is that, you know, I think Cam is in a situation where, hey, he's maybe still looking for an opportunity to be a starter, thinks that there'll be something out there. The investment on that is more significant for a team. They're going to want to be more sure. Whereas, you know, it's a backup deal, you know, with the Jets, and that's just easier done. So it's easier for Flacco, it's easier for the Jets, and that's why something like that happens, I believe.
Give us your thoughts on the onside kick alternative that's out there.
I think that it is I think it starts to benefit. How do I say this? It is a benefit over what the current situation is in terms of if you're the losing team, right? I think you're more likely to get a 4th and 15 than you will be to get an onside kick without letting anybody get more than a 5-yard, you know, head start at you know, covering the football.
Right.
Part of the reason I think that is, one, it's just been so hard to recover an onside kick, but two, you know, now that you are going to have these 4th and 15 scenarios, they're going to be practiced. And, yeah, they'll be practiced on defense, but, like, they're going to be practiced more on offense, and there's going to be a plan more for them on offense. And I think because of that, you know, they're going to favor, you know, the losing team that's trying to get another possession.
Okay, so is 4th and 15, because there's a lot of sliding scale. If my quarterback is Aaron Rodgers, that's different than if my quarterback is, you know, an aging Steve DeBerg, or just to throw a name out there, right? Your quarterback and your receivers, that's going to slide the ability to get the 4th and 15. So is 4th and 15 the right number? And if so, is the yard line that you start on the right number? In other words, 4th and 15, should you be on your own 5-yard line instead of the 20 or the 25 or wherever you're going to get it?
Well, if you should be on the 5, you know, you think about an onside kick. If they're trying to just kind of replace the onside kick, I think that and make it more exciting, right? I think a 4th and, you know, like on your own 5-yard line, I guess you're taking possession at the, what is that? The 30-yard line, you know, 25-yard line, or
25.
Like, to me, yeah. Like, I don't know. I just, usually the clock's a factor. You know, I like the idea. You know, when you cover an onside kick, I mean, you're basically around midfield. I like the idea of being there, kind of in striking distance. You know, 4th and 20. I think it'd be really hard. I don't know what the numbers on 4th and 20 would be, but I think you would probably have a similar success rate on 4th and 20, you know, in terms of what you have recovering the onside kick. I think what they want to do is make it more exciting.
What we don't want, though, what we don't want is to have the middle of the season like we did in the pass interference thing going, man, why they didn't put enough thought into this. This isn't working. Like, the team is getting it way too often, or you still have no shot. You know, you want to hit that perfect spot where it adds excitement. Yeah. It takes away the injury opportunities of the onside kick. But I think they got to really make sure they put it at the right spot.
So what would be the percentage that you would want it converted at? You know,
I think you would want it to be about the same as it used to be for the onside kick, probably between 15% and 20%, right?
Yeah, and I think that there's a chance that it's less than 15%. You know, I don't think we're going to see these all the time. You know, I don't know how many onside kicks there were last year, but, you know, I don't think that we're going to see, you know, 20 of these attempts, you know, weekend. I just, like, we're going to see them in, you know, certain games when the situation arises, you know, like that's when you would see them. And, you know, if you just look at, you know, third and 10 plus conversion rates, they're not very good. And, you know, so with that being the case, like, I don't think you're going to be at 20% on a fourth and 15. I really don't, even with the teams practicing it and get better at it. Look, some will be better than the others based on how your team is built. You know, your, I think your pass protection is. I mean, like, fourth and 15 take a long time. So I feel like the number is the right number, and I'm not sure that there's going to be this unintended consequence the way that there has been about, you know, with the catch rule and with the pass interference rule. Like, I'm having a hard time envisioning what the unintended consequence would be, because I don't think you're going to have, even if you were off and it was 28% recovery rate, like, is that a bad thing?
I think you would have people saying, hey, this is different. This is different than football has been played for 100 years. If it gets that high.
Yeah, but the thing I would say is I don't think people would be complaining. I mean, obviously a losing team and its fans would, but like, I don't think people would be complaining if all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, now this last minute of this game, rather than watching, you know, two kneel downs, is, you know, I got three more shots at the end zone here. You know?
There'd be an upside, no question.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. So you did allude to the pass interference rule. Do you feel better that Troy Vincent has come out and said it was an epic failure, or does that really matter to you that the NFL is admitting that it just didn't work?
I am actually thrilled that they are acknowledging that it didn't work, because the thing that I think has bothered me the most about, you know, some of these situations with the league in the past is, you know, a little bit like when they'll give an explanation on a blown call over after the weekend and be like, no, we got it right. It's like, no, wait a second. No, we're watching this and we know you didn't get it right. Like, you're insulting my intelligence as a fan and a viewer by telling me this. So I actually appreciate the fact that they're like, you know what, we blew it. It was terrible. It failed. It didn't work. Like, because we all knew it. And so had they come out and kind of reverse course in terms of what they said, like, or I don't know. I think that's better. So, yeah, it was a total failure because it wasn't used the way it was supposed to be used. And then it got to the point where they were changing how they were using it without ever telling anybody that that's what they were doing. And so you had everyone from coaches to players to fans having no idea, you know, what, you know, like how something was going to be used or ruled. And so that's never good for the game.
So do you like the, you know, we saw it in the XFL and the AAF, do you like the sky judge idea to help with some of this stuff? Or would that be a rush to judgment, so to speak?
I think I'm okay with it from the standpoint of, like, unless we're going to be, like, you know, trigger happy with it, I'm all for it. Like, I'm not an anti-replay guy. Like, some people are like, listen, it's a, you know, it's a human error, like, just live with the call on the field and go. Like, I think we want calls right. It's why everyone was so upset about the Nickell Roby Coleman play in the Saints-Rams game, is because we want it to be right. And so, like, I'm for, if there's, like, a brutal mistake, I'm for someone being like, hey, let's get this right. With that being said, you know, I do think there are elements of, you know, we could all do it. I think there's some stuff we would see where we would all be in agreement and be like, yep, that's PI, or yep, that was a catch, or yep, you know, both of his feet were in. But there are going to be some times where we look at it. I mean, think of the Music City Miracle, right? So we look at it and it's like, was it a lateral? Was it not? Like, what, like for stuff like that, you just got to live with it. Like, it is what, like the call on the field has to stand, and sometimes you have to let it go. So, and I think you just have to understand it's going to be that way. So that's where I am with it. I don't want it to be something that, you know, every official on the field is, is officiating the game differently because they're waiting to be overridden, you know, by somebody, you know, the eye in the sky that's controlling that.
Tim, good stuff as always. Thanks for joining us. You and the family safe? Everything good?
Thanks. Yeah, we're good. You know, I'm working on my shelving. I might have to move my in-home studio. It's been a little disruptive to the rest of the crew here.
Okay.
So, you know,
we'll get an update on that.
I'm finding that picture. Finding that picture of Chase and I walking on the beach. I'm trying to figure out where I'm gonna put that.
Did he trip over anything when you guys were walking on the beach?
No,
a turtle, a sea turtle.
Good stuff. Enjoy the rest of your week. Always
see,
good to
we
talk
should
to
dare
you.
Tim to put things up behind him on some of these live shots. That could be fun.
Listen, not above. I'm not above doing that. Not above doing that. But
we will. We may come up with a list and see. Run it by you next time and see if you're willing to do any of it.
Okay, I have said words on air before that made no sense. for a reward. I don't think any of you guys are above that. Okay,
no, not at all.
Pretty sure on some press broadcasts, I've heard some words. I'm like, why did he say?
I have had some proposals. Let's just say that.
All right, Tim. Thanks, man.
Good stuff. See you guys.
All right, that's Tim Hasselbeck. Always
enjoy my laundry.
Our chats with him here on Darren Donica Chase. We'll be back. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. Good show today. Heather Dinich kind of got us going down this football rabbit hole. She kicked off the second hour. Then Tim Hasselbeck kind of continued that discussion with him, and there's still a lot of uncertainty on the college football world. By the way, I've done that before, kind of how we ended with Tim. Chase, you weren't a part of those trips back then. This is when we were at a previous stop, and they challenged me with two words when I came back from the trip on that Monday show. I'll never forget the show. I think we were out at Temple Hills.
I've heard this story, though.
Golf course, and there were two words they challenged me to work into the show, and I told them, well, I'm going to just do it in the 6 o'clock hour. I'm not going to do it, you know. I'm going to wait till the 6 o'clock hour, and I don't think I ever told you, Willie, but you probably went, why in the world did he just say that? That didn't even make any. Why did he work that? That was weird that he threw that word in there. That didn't make any sense, but they were all listening. It was, just for self-pleasure then, and about 10 people because nobody had a clue what I was doing, but it was, they dared me to do it. And I vowed, you know, I was like, I'm going to do it at some point during that hour. And I did. And, you know, a lot of these guys are listening online out of state. And of course they were all just cracking up, but I've done that before. I don't know if you've ever done it on air or on a broadcast, but I do remember vividly doing that. That's been probably a decade ago, at least.
I don't remember that I've ever done it. I've certainly had people throw out something completely. Here's what you should say. I'll give, you know, why, if you say this, I'll give you whatever, you know, but it's hard to do that. I'm sure there are ways to do that without completely going out of your way and sounding awkward when you do it. I just don't have confidence that I could do it that way. And especially in hockey where it's so fast, like in baseball, it's slow enough that you could probably do it a little easier, or in a talk show probably easier because you could control the pace a little bit more. But it's so reactionary in hockey, it would be really tough.
Where did the – because I don't think we've had this conversation on the show. Where did the Oh My Laundry thing even come from?
Well, there was a coach that I had in Medicine Hat, my manager. His name is Omar Malave. And he was from Venezuela, and he had this awesome accent. Great guy. That was one of the things that made him, and a lot of great minor league instructors, so important. The ability to be bilingual and bond with everybody on your team. You know, the Blue Jays at that time were at the forefront of, they had a lot of Latin players from different Spanish-speaking countries. And so the ability to communicate with everybody and bring everybody together was very important, especially with a lot of guys who are just thrown together from all over the globe, basically. But that was a saying that he had that used to make us laugh all the time. And he had a special accent the way he said it. And I'd almost forgotten about it. And a few years ago, one of my teammates from that team came through Nashville, and he and I got together for lunch, and he came to the game that night, and he said that at lunchtime. I was like, you know what? That's actually pretty funny, because you think about hockey, people say, oh, my goodness, or oh, my, all the time, and I was just thinking of something to change it up every now and then. So I just thought that would be pretty good, and it had some pretty good feedback. So I thank Omar. And I haven't seen Omar in probably like 20 years. I saw him a few years after I stopped playing, but if I ever see him, I'm giving him full credit for that.
Do you have any idea where he is?
He kept coaching for a long time in the Blue Jays minor league system. But no, I don't know where he is right now.
We should get him on the show.
He was a good player. He played in AAA. That would be awesome. Okay, if I can find him, we're definitely having him on the show. No question.
Yes.
Let's put the Google search out.
Okay. You have probably never even looked him up. You should first by start seeing if he's even on social media. Maybe it would be an easier path if he's on social media. I don't know. That you probably have never looked. I had
a
boss.
I'm going to start looking right now.
20 years ago that used to say anywho. And the reason I remember it so well is because I'd never heard that 20 years ago. I'm like, it always used to crack me up. He would say anywho all the time. This is 20 years ago. And that's why I always remember him, just because he would lead meetings and stuff. And just casual conversation, he would just, he would have that pause and he would go, anywho. And he would just say it all the time.
I'll
never forget that.
I think of Homer Simpson when I hear that.
Really?
Anywho.
See, I really didn't get it. It was interesting you brought that up with Adam. I didn't really get into The Simpsons. And it's hard to believe considering.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Considering I felt like everybody did in that, that window. But I really didn't. And I don't know why. Obviously, I had other stuff going on. I don't know.
Sure.
I watched it kind of, but not really.
That show, it is hard to believe. Like,
how old is that show now?
Well, I'll be 33 in a month, and I think they're going into season 33. I think we're the same age.
That's amazing.
Because it started as a short on the Tracy Ullman show, and so I think it was like 89 that it got its full sitcom, so maybe season 32, but we're around the same age.
And so there's been episodes, and so there was a lot of anywho on.
Yeah,
Simpsons.
there was an episode where Homer said that, and it just reminds me of him. But and that's one of those shows. Like, I've watched the new episodes some, and it's still funny, but it's like, okay, they're reusing a lot of. I mean, the show's been on 30 plus years, so they're reusing a lot of stuff. The first 10 seasons to me are gold. Those are the best ones. And so, like, whenever FXX or something does a marathon, it's the full series is on Disney Plus. So when Disney Plus first came out, I was having a field day watching old Simpsons episodes and laughing, texting people that I know, Adam being one of them. Because one thing that is kind of a tradition, when I go downstairs for a Preds game, when I go to the media room to get ready for post game, Robbie Stanley's always in the media room, Adam Vingan. A few others are in there, but Adam and I always, it never fails that we end up quoting The Simpsons, and Robbie's just used to it at this point, but he rolls his eyes, and especially whenever the Preds play the Colorado Avalanche, there's a line where Homer says to his kids, and that's the terrifying tale of how the Quebec Nordiques became the Colorado Avalanche, and that always comes up.
Willie's gone quiet. He must be searching.
I think Omar is still managing in the Blue Jays chain. If I'm seeing this right, as of last year, I think he managed in Dunedin in the Class A Florida State League, and he was the manager of the year.
Get out of here! Really?
Which doesn't surprise me at all. No, he's the man. Omar is awesome.
Well, Mike says on our text line, if Omar does not have a blue check mark, Willie will not find him.
Or talk to him.
And Chris says, your afternoon host says anywho, and it annoys the heck out of me.
Well, he didn't create anywho. I heard a guy say it 20
years
ago.
Now that he brings that up, I have heard Jared use that.
This guy said it all. Like, it was just his part of his, you know, the way he talked. I mean, you'd have a conversation with him. There'd be that pause, like, every conversation. And then he would be like, anywho. So it was everyday conversation with him. I heard that for a long time. So did you guys, we're going to put that, you're in charge of Omar. That's solely in your lap. You need to be on the Omar hunt after the show. See if you can get him on this week. Let's be honest.
Oh,
is
man.
He busy?
That would be awesome.
Hell, he's busy. Come on. He's got, what else is he got? What else can he be doing? Come on. He needs
it's
to
more
do
of a
this.
Question of, can he put a name with the face? Like, I might need to send a picture of myself just to, so he remembers me. He's probably coached, what, 1,000 minor league players.
Well,
he was the first base coach.
Don't send him a current picture. Don't send him a current picture.
Well,
he'll
I would
never,
have to send him the Medicine Hat Blue Jays team roster. In fact, I have. I will send you guys a picture of the baseball card I have of Omar from our team. As I still have our team set from 1993. So Omar played in the minors from 81 to 89 with the Jays. Then he went into the coaching staff from 91 to 2009 in the minors, either managing or coaching. And then he was the first base coach of the Toronto Blue Jays for one season in 2010. Then went to the Latin American operations part of Toronto's system. And then came back in 2014 to start managing again in the minors. And so I think he's still with Dunedin. Class A.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's something.
Where are they now?
How about
I could.
That?
We have. I have so many fun stories from that season that he. You know, he's coached 30 something years. Now I can't imagine he would remember these specific stories, but he might get a couple of laughs out of it.
That's great.
You never know.
It's up to you now. I was just reading a tweet from Alan Bell. Of course, he's with Sportsline, and he says, according to Sportsline, advanced data simulations, the Preds have a 7.63% chance to win the Western Conference and a 2.9% chance to win the Stanley Cup. Just for reference, they were 1.1% for the Cup before the shutdown. So their numbers have actually gone up, which is pretty interesting. I think that
is very intriguing.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to be intriguing about this whole thing is truly none of us have any clue what it's going to look like when they come back. Who's going to be good? Who's not going to be good? There's no way to know. Everybody's going to, respond differently.
Well, because you can only base what you think on what you saw before.
But can
before
you?
This happened.
But that's the thing, though. You can't. Like,
well,
I think
I mean.
You have to throw that out the window, right?
Let me rephrase it. What I mean is that's the only data you have, and so yes, you have to throw it out because it doesn't mean anything because it's basically like starting over.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting that their odds went up.
I guess because we take a break and try to sort through that, but it's an interesting theory because you would think if you have to win more games and you have to win an extra round, your chances would go down.
Yeah.
But I guess as the chances also go up, that the field will open up wide open, and some of the better teams are more likely to lose early, and so your path to the championship might be a little different than it was going to be, and maybe therefore easier.
All right, we'll come back and wrap up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. A little Jungle Love coming back. Chris Mason, fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's coming up at 1 o'clock. So we were talking about Sportsline. I told you Alan Bell tweeted out, who joins us on our show from time to time. We always enjoy our conversations with him. Alan Bell, 247 on Twitter. He's with Sportsline. He says Sportsline's advanced data simulations has the Preds at a 7.63% chance to win the Western Conference and a 2.9% chance to win the cup. Just for reference point, they were a 1.1% to win the cup before the shutdown. So they went up considerably, and nothing's happened. Nothing's been played. So we're kind of like throwing out our theories why that would happen, considering we're talking about a longer run in the playoffs. This format creates more challenges than the normal setup. But we don't know. Also, first and second rounds, it hasn't been determined. Is it going to be five-game or is it going to be a seven-game series? By the way, we haven't really touched
on that. Even know that.
So what do you guys –
that could change a lot.
What's your gut – absolutely. What's your gut feeling on what they're going to come out and rule on that since they've left it open?
I think the three out of five or five or four out of seven has everything to do with the timetable, right? How quickly they're – if they're able to start on July 1st – or not July – they start training camp, that is, on July 1st, and then start the season when they want to, then I think they could probably make it work four out of seven. If they get behind, I think that's their measure to make up time, is you just play three out of five the first two rounds. That's my thinking. I don't know that to be a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all has to do with when they get started. So I'm with Willie there. I'm just sitting here thinking, trying to do it all in my head. I feel like the first round could be best of five, you know, three out of five.
Don't you think it's going to be the same? Don't they need to be uniform?
Or that
do you
would
think
be
there's
ideal.
A chance it's, I mean, I don't like if they do one round one way, the other round another.
I think, too, another thing that you can consider, and timeline has everything to do with this, but do you think that maybe secretly the NHL has thought, would it make sense in the future to maybe make the first round best of five, or do they like best of seven? I don't know the answer to
that.
That's
to me
asking.
Only if we're talking about expansion. If we're talking about, you know, Seattle comes in the league and there's more, there's another round or there's more teams allowed in, I think yes. If they could get into kind of like what baseball does, not a one game, but a best of three or best of five shorter series, I think that's a possibility. Because I do think there's a chance that, you know, they're going to like this. Maybe not it's not going to be 24, but there's a chance they're going to like
reasonable.
More. Maybe a couple more teams, maybe it's two or four more teams into the playoffs. If so, then I think you need to come up with a scenario of a shorter round. Maybe that little group is a best of three, and then maybe you have the first round as best of five, and then you do seven the rest of the way. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing things out there.
No, but I think it's a think that adds some excitement.
They did used to have three out of five.
When was that?
Years ago. We're talking about the, I think, early 80s. I think they had the first round up to a certain point. I have to check out what year they stopped. But the first round did used to be three out of five.
Yeah, but see, wasn't that a less round, too? And with a less round?
Yeah, because they didn't have.
No, they were still four rounds.
Really? How many teams were in the league?
Yes. There was 21. They used to have 16 out of the 21
wow.
teams make the playoffs, which that used to be pretty
That's
crazy.
That's absurd.
You get a trophy, and you get a trophy.
Like, how bad were you not
and
to
there
make
was
the
an
playoffs
odd time.
Back
there, there was an odd time that a team that was well under 500 made it all the way to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, sure. I mean, you know that's going to happen, right? Whenever you – but, I mean, how about the five that got left out? Like, how bad were you that year? For you to get left out of that
pretty
playoff
bad.
Scenario, really bad, yeah.
Well, probably along the lines of the Anaheim Ducks, LA Kings, San Jose Sharks, Buffalo Sabres.
No, no, not. I think you have to be Detroit level bad.
Detroit,
because what Willie's saying is true. If you're getting 16 in, some of those teams have to get in, Chase. If you're only leaving five out, I mean, some of those bad teams we identify as bad now, they're in that playoff scenario,
right? Yeah, that was – I mean, Detroit. Detroit definitely falls in the category of just bad.
Under any format.
Sure. Sure.
But I think that I don't know. I guess I don't have a real good vibe one way or the other of probably where they're leaning, five or seven. I don't know. I mean, it sounds to
and
me
I don't know
after
if
what
they do either. That's
after
why
what Gary
open.
Bettman said on Golic and Wingo. this morning, I mean, it's and we identified this at the beginning of the show, it does seem like your timeline is probably going to be more on than off. So I think if we're really talking about August, and if you're talking about, Willie, you've brought this 55 days, okay, so you don't want to start your season after Christmas. So 55-day window to make this work is almost 2 months. You can't be wrapping up on Halloween, so you're going to have to get this over mid-October? Third week of October to start in, like, the middle of December? That's the kind of way I look at it.
That's got to be the only reason why they would contemplate the 3 out of 5, because I don't think they would choose. The more games they play, the more TV revenue they're going to get, right? So there's an incentive to play 4 out of 7 when you can, but time may not allow that. So I think that's exactly why they put it out the way it did. Just for the record, 1987 was the first year that they changed the first round to 4 out of 7. So it's been the way it is now since 1987. Up until 86, the first round was just 3 out of 5.
Wow. I didn't realize back then, with such fewer teams, that they still did that. That they let that many teams in.
Let me ask you guys this. Let's say they're fortunate enough to beat the Coyotes in the first round, or the play-in, rather, the qualifying. We're going to have to get used to saying that, right? The qualifying round is what they officially said yesterday. So now you're in the first round, and you play, let's just say, the Colorado Avalanche. Are the Predators, do they have better odds trying to beat them 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 7? If you're an underdog, would you rather have the 3 out of 5 or would you rather have the 4 out of 7? And then how would you feel if you're the favorite? I would think the favorite, you would want 4 out of 7, right? That increases the chances that the better team wins.
Yeah.
Fair to say, or do you guys disagree?
Who's got home ice advantage? That's a joke.
Well, we know the answer to that.
I would still say it doesn't. To me, it doesn't matter. If you're the better team, you just win. You find a way to win the series. I understand where you're. I think I know where you're going with this. Usually, you know, conventional wisdom is we certainly see it play out in the NBA. We saw it with Last Dance, right? How many times do we see the Bulls fall behind 2-0 in a series, in a 7-game series, and come back and win the series pretty easily? And so the point you're trying to make is the longer it goes, the better team will prevail. So I think that's why you're throwing this out there. But I don't know if I necessarily subscribe to that. I do think, yes, a shorter series does give – lend itself more to the upset. But, I mean, these games that we're talking about, honestly, what really is the gap between the teams? I mean, really. And this is not 1 versus 12. Like, that's a totally different thing. I mean, when you look at some of these matchups, I mean, what is the gap between Calgary and Winnipeg? A coin toss? Heads,
yeah,
for
probably.
One, tails for the other, right? I mean, it's 50-50.
Definitely. Definitely a coin toss.
I mean, what's the gap between,
yeah,
honestly, Vancouver
death.
And Minnesota? Is it really the difference between a 5-game
minuscule
or a 7-game series? I don't think so.
Yeah, and you know, another thing.
No, it's for the bigger underdog. I think the bigger the underdog, the more you might like the short series. That's my theory.
It's more
anyway,
geared toward,
yeah,
Edmonton,
I'll tell you scared
Chicago.
To death. I'll tell you who's going nuts today. Toronto. Think about Toronto. They play Columbus. Columbus, more so than any team, is going to benefit from just having everybody healed up. They had like 8 or 9 guys with season-ending injuries. Now they might get a lot of those guys, including Seth Jones, back. And so that's a toss-up series against the Maple Leafs, who have all these expectations. They got to beat the Blue Jackets, who beat the President's Trophy winner last year in 4 games. They don't quite have the same firepower, but they're still a pretty good team. That's a really scary series for the Maple Leafs.
And that's a big factor, the injuries, and how you're going to have, I mean, nobody, how many times have we used the phrase that nobody's 100% this time of year? Well, now you have the teams that are maybe the closest that they've ever been, because they have guys that were out of the lineup completely that have healed up, and anyone else that had a nagging injury, you know, they've had time to heal. So that's another thing that factors into making this a little more wide open than it would normally be, which I think is exciting. You know, obviously you don't want to have 3 months off, but at least you know you're going to get teams that are healed up.
I guess if I'm being honest, to me there's only two matchups where really I feel confident answering it. Seven games would benefit Montreal and, you know, Chicago. I mean, a five-game series would benefit Montreal and Chicago, right? The shorter series, because to me there's a pretty significant gap between Pittsburgh and Montreal and Edmonton and Chicago, in my mind. That's the way I look at it. Those are the two matchups where I say there's a large enough gap that if you shorten the series, maybe you then allow Chicago and Montreal, who should be heavy underdogs, an opportunity to pull off the upset. Seven-game series, the longer it goes, better teams will prevail. Their odds go way down. So I think to answer your question on my end, I would say it only applies to two matchups.
Which is fair.
I'll give you an example from the history. And I think Pete Weber would be able to tell you a lot about this particular series, the players involved. But let's take a young Wayne Gretzky, 1982 Edmonton Oilers. Best of five in the first round. Oilers finished the season with 111 points. They're starting to get it going. The Kings are their first round opponent, because, as we mentioned, 16 out of the 21 teams in the league make the playoffs. The Kings finished the regular season 24-41-15, 63 points. But they are the four seed in the division. You just have to – the division seeded 1-4, and you play the tournament from there. The Kings won the series 3-2. They knocked the Oilers out. They hit 63 points in the regular season, like 40 points less, almost 50 points less than the team they're playing, and they still beat them 3 out of 5. So hockey, probably more so than any sport, definitely basketball, right? The underdog always has a shot. So the shorter the series, the more it benefits the underdog, I think.
Wasn't that the big upsets in the NBA where we saw 8 take down 1, the very, very few times it's happened? Wasn't it a 5-game series? The Nuggets.
Yeah, and in fact, I think they used to have 2 out of 3 way back.
But, I mean, the big ones that we can identify.
I think they used to play a 2 out of 3.
Wasn't it the 5-game series, the big upsets we've seen in the NBA playoffs?
Oh, yeah. They went first round best of five for a lot longer than hockey did. I think they took that maybe even into the 2000s before they went 4 best of 7.
Yeah. And now we don't see hardly ever really any upsets. It's a whole lot of chalk for a good while in the NBA playoffs, really until you get to the conference finals, in my opinion. All right, we'll come back. We'll start the fourth and final hour with Chris Mason. We do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.